So for the past Hare Krishna, all quiet, we need your attention to be able to start. So for the past few years we've been, Radhika and I, this is Radhika, my wife, and I, we've been traveling, you know, quite intensely, you know, for the past 5 years, traveling and doing kirtan. And for the past couple of years or so, we've been starting to do these kirtan workshops just to make ourselves and other devotees and people aware, you know, what is kirtan, what is the culture of kirtan, what is the mood of kirtan, why we do kirtan. You know, we're not just sitting and doing something sentimental, you know, just repeating one mantra, but we need to know what's behind.
So we first start with, why do we do kirtan? So the past two verses of the past 2 days, actually yesterday and today, you know what it was, Kale Doshe, Nide Rajan, Ashihir Ekumahanguna. And this age of Kali is full of faults. Nobody can deny that. But there is one supremely good quality, Kirtanadeva Krishnasya. So Kirtan of Krishna, Mukta Sangha Parambhujet, our world's one, the supreme, highest, most destination. We also know the verse from today, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Only the chanting of Hari Kirtan. Hare Nama three times, Eva Kevalam. In Kalo Nashyeva, Nashyeva, there's no other way in Kali Yuga but the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. To somehow or the other award us this freedom from the shackles of material life. So when we understand this a little bit, we come to Krishna consciousness, and by good fortune, whatever good fortune we have accumulated in the past, we start to chant Hare Krishna. So that sound vibration is the only bridge between the material and the spiritual. Because with these eyes, these ears, these hands, we cannot touch the Supreme Divine. It's not possible. It's material body is made up of material nature. And it has no access whatsoever to even be close to Krishna, who is completely the embodiment of spiritual energy through and through, totally spiritual. Unlike us, we are 100th part of the tip of the hair. That's all we are. And so we understand that, we start to chant, but then, and also the last verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the very last verse, Namasankirtanam yasya sarva papa pranashanam pranamo dukha samanash tam namami harim param. I offer my respects unto Sri Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sins, and the offering of obeisance unto whom relieves all material suffering. So the last verse of the Bhagavatam is here. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he writes about it. He says, the last word in the Bhagavatam is Nama Sankirtan. The Bhagavatam has given such great importance to chanting to the holy names of Krishna. Nothing more is necessary. This is the very conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Chant then the holy name of Krishna and begin your life in this dark age of Kali. This is from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself. So we understand all that. Why do we do kirtan? We come to Krishna consciousness, we start to do kirtan. And so many things happen that we did not expect. Where is the progress? Why don't I see it tangibly? Am I doing something wrong? Or is the process wrong? What is it? So here Bhaktisiddhanta writes, as one cultivates and acquires knowledge about the goal of bhakti, about the various stages of bhava and love of Krishna, problems may arise. The process of becoming free of these problems is known as anatta nivritti, the removal of unwanted elements. So we understand, okay, we're chanting Hare Krishna, nothing is happening. So we try to understand why. When we go a little bit, we cultivate knowledge a little bit, we understand there are three stages of chanting. Namaparad, Namabhas, Shuddhanam. Now, on the stage of Namaparad, pretty much nothing's going to happen. So what Bhaktisiddhanta mentions here, the removal of unwanted things, that's a clearing stage, right? Namabhas. So he also writes, sometimes neophyte devotees want to advance in Krishna consciousness, but they attempt to do so unaware of the dangers that lie ahead. So this is new. We didn't know that, you know, to want to progress in spiritual life, there are dangers. Nobody told us that at the beginning. But now we learn there are dangers. So what do we do? Do we continue or do we stop? Or do we just do what we want? You know, we somehow take a little bit from here, a little bit from there. We adjust, make our own little hippie world, and we go on. What do we do? It is said that if you are going to track a deer in the jungle, then you had better know what the footprints of a tiger look like. Similarly, there are impediments to advancement in spiritual life. So when we are performing our bhajan, our kirtan, seems to be we have to be very careful. So we delve a little bit deeper to understand what it is. Prabhupada says there are the do's and the don'ts. So we were talking about the bridge that we build from the material to the spiritual, and how we also cannot access anything spiritual really until we are in the Namabhas stage. So we also understand, it's very clear from all this, that this process of devotional service, it starts with us, only us. The first step is us, it's not Krishna. Yeya tamam prapadyanti tam sateva bhajamiham. You see, all this philosophy, it's real. It's not just theory in a book. We live it every second, every day of our life. It makes sense. Krishna says, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. It makes sense. So according to how much we want Krishna in our life, this is how much we're going to devote to his service. And the easiest service in this age of Kali, we all know, is Harinam. There isn't, what else can we do? How else do we access that divine spiritual energy? So that effort into chanting has to be made. Otherwise, there will be no result. Now, okay, we establish why we do kirtan and how we should do kirtan. Now, the purpose of kirtan. The purpose of kirtan is to serve the Supreme for his pleasure only. Nothing to do with us. This is terrible, actually. It's hard to understand that I'm going to go take part in something for 6 hours, and I should not expect anything for me in there. No pleasure for me. Only service. It's really hard. The way the material world is constructed is not for this purpose. The way it's constructed is whatever I do, I want something in result. As a result, I need to see that. Otherwise, I don't keep doing it. But that's how Krishna wants it. How else do we do it? So we come to understand by doing this, we come to understand we are servants and he is supreme. I don't know if anyone has ever had experience of what a servant is. Or maybe when you serve the guru, a very few, they understand that. But I remember when I was a child, my mother had servants. And they lived in the house. They didn't have 1 minute to themselves. Not 1 minute. Come and cut the vegetables. Oh, the child just made a mess. Go clean there. And go clean this. and somebody needs this preparation, go take it to the next house. Every second, there was not 1 minute that was their own. So when we come and sit in kirtan, we don't expect anything for ourselves. All for Krishna. We start to learn how to be servant. It's for His supreme service, because He's the supreme enjoyer, and we serve according to His desire. We have heard when Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, we are not the seer, we are seen. We do not try to see Krishna. Like, I don't go and say, I'm going to the temple to see Krishna. I'm going to take darshan. I don't see Krishna. If I would see Krishna, I would see what He was doing. It's like when I go and I say, oh, I saw such and such guru. Oh, really? What was he doing? Oh, he was reading, or he was talking with someone. That means seeing. When I go to see Krishna, all I'm seeing is the statue, unfortunately. So we act in a way that Krishna sees us. This is what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says. Because we are not the seer. So when we do things voluntarily for Krishna's pleasure, He sees us. That's very, very important, actually, to understand that. We try to understand the progress of chanting Hare Krishna by trying to understand Shikshashtaka. That's easy. The first verse, glory is to the Shri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all dust accumulated for years. Cheto Darpana, Marjana. Darpana means mirror. So the mirror of the heart is dusty from so many lifetimes in this material world. And we are sitting there because we are the soul. It makes sense. We don't see ourselves in that dusty mirror. That's how we cannot realize ourselves. So the only way to clean that mirror is by chanting the holy name. The glory is to Shri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all dust accumulated for years. It spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It extinguishes the fire of conditional life. It's explaining the glories of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left only 8 verses, but very, very significant. If we can understand that, we understand how it works with the chanting. So the first verse explaining us what the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is and what it does. Now, after explaining that, we would expect the next verse would be, so how do we take part and become an associate of Krishna? But he explains the first verse, all the glories of this of these three names, Hare Krishna and Rama. And then what does he say? Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shaktish. They have hundreds and thousands of names. And in each and every one of them, you have invested your sarva shaktish. And they're not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. But I'm so durdaivam. I'm so unfortunate. And I don't have attraction for any one of them. So first, there's the glories of the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It's there, but I cannot access it because I have no attraction. So what to do? That's the third verse. Chinada Pisuni Chena, we should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind. So how do we get a humble state of mind? Do we practice this? Do we practice being humble? Does anybody practice being humble? This is how it works. I'm normally a great soul, but now I'm practicing to be humble. No. It's from a platform of reality. See, when Rupa and Sanatana, they say we are more fallen than Jagai and Madai. What is it based on? Is it based on some theoretical sentiment that will show them as great devotees? It's based on the reality that they were in the employ of the Nawab. They were associating with those kind of people who were slaughtering cows, destroying Vedic culture, doing all kind of abominable things. So when they say we are more fallen than Jagan Madai, it's based on reality. Chinadapi Sunichena, humble, because it's real. I know who I am. I know my weaknesses. I know my failings, my failures, my inadequacies, impossibility to come up to the level that Krishna would want, that Guru would want. I alone know it. Lucky there's no mirror behind my head to reflect my heart. Otherwise everybody would run away from me. But that's a state of reality. So when we chant from the state of real acceptance of where we are, this is when we can make real progress. We cannot make progress from the platform of theory. It will just stay there, theory. Nothing will happen. So, Chinadapi Sunichena, Tarori Vasahishnana. We are more humble than a blade of grass because we know who we are and know everybody else is better than we are. Because somehow, these horrible things that's in my heart, it's not possible that other people have the same kind of stuff. They must be better than I am. Devoid of all sense of false prestige. How can I be proud? Knowing who I am. Pride about what? For what? No, in that state of mind, this is a platform where I can chant the holy name in a helpless way. Because I can do nothing to change myself. We are born in a certain way, with a certain nature. And like if somebody doesn't have patience, you know, you can practice to be patient, but it's not in your nature. It would be very difficult. So from a platform when we accept what we are and what we are not, we can cry out helplessly when we chant Hare Krishna. Oh Krishna, and this is what I am, and my heart is full of that. And I'm chanting your names, and it's horrible because I cannot do it purely, but whatever I have, please accept it. Please accept it, because I am your devotee. Somehow or the other, in some lifetime, one day, I will come to you, but I am your devotee. Then Krishna accepts this. He sees that. But now there's a danger. Because when that we come to that platform of reality, we somehow become close, get in contact with that very powerful spiritual energy, very attractive spiritual energy. What happens? What's the fourth verse? Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavita. I do not want followers. I do not want wealth. I do not want beautiful women or beautiful boys, whatever. Or even the person I see in the mirror, which I think is worse, you know, we are so attached to that person in the mirror. Perfection of that person that we see in the mirror is even worse than anything else. I do not want all of that. I do not want any material achievements. I only want to cause this devotional service, birth after birth. Those two verses, Jnanapi Nadanam, if we cannot get past that, we cannot come to the stage of Ainanda Tanuja, Kinkara, servant. We cannot come to the stage of where we are servant of Krishna. Because those two verses, that's anatta niviti, getting out, rid of all unwanted things. Before that, Rati cannot develop. There cannot be attachment. It makes sense. If there's other things in our heart, how can Krishna be present there? He won't come. He's very demanding. We've seen that in the Bhagavad Gita. Become my devotee, surrender to me, me alone. You know, Krishna, I am the seed-giving father. Everything emanates from me. You know, if anybody would speak like that, we'd have, my God, full of himself. But Krishna is God. He can do whatever he wants. He is like that. That's his opulence. Prabhupada says we should try to know Krishna by reading the Bhagavad Gita. We try to understand him. But this is what he is. He's full of himself because everything is from him. It makes sense. So if we have anything else in the heart, he will not come. And without Rati, there will not be a rasa. There's no mellows of relationship. It's not going to happen. So this is basic. Changing our rounds. Trying to chant with that determination of pleasing Sri Harinam Prabhu is very important. And coming to Kirtan, there's one quote here from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Alone, I obtain no strength. Remember this and perform Kirtan, Yajna, in unison. The indispensable good quality expected of those in charge of Kirtan Yajna is to have friendship with all Vaishnavas and execute devotional service by pleasing all Vaishnavas. So this is another point that is very, very important we should keep together. We should have those Yajnas like now often together. That's very powerful, nourishes us and protects us. So now Madhava will speak about practical Kirtan, and then we'll come back to basis of real.
First, I would like to talk about my little Kirtan experience that I had with Aindra Prabhu. Many of you know Aindra Das, Aindra Prabhu. Raise your hand, those who do. Right. Aindra Prabhu was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And he went to Vrindavan and restarted the 24-hour Kirtan. It was Srila Prabhupada's desire to have 24-hour kirtan in Vrindavan and Mayapur, so that the devotees, when they would come to the holy dam, they would be immersed in a spiritual atmosphere by the power of kirtan. And I was fortunate and lucky enough to be, you know, close to Aindra Prabhu and Aindra Prabhu's mridanga player. And I was 18. When I joined the 24-hour kirtan. But I've been growing up, my parents are devotees, I've been growing up playing mridanga since I was 5 years old. And I went to Vrindavan, and it was quite an experience, you know, because leaving Mauritius, small island, and going to India for the first time, in the middle of the winter, you know, Mauritius, there's no winters, it's just nice and warm. And the very first day I came to Vrindavan, I had a letter of recommendation for Aindra Prabhu. I went to the temple room, and there were some devotees sitting down and doing kirtan. And they called me, and I went and sat down and picked up the mridanga and started playing. And then half an hour later, you know, this devotee came and started singing. So then I kept on playing mridanga because no one showed up. And then after that kirtan, he said, you play nice mridanga, why don't you join the 24-hour kirtan? And I said, yes, I actually came to join the 24-hour kirtan. And I have a letter of recommendation for Aindra Das. And he looked at me and he smiled. And he said, I'm Aindra Das. Then I looked at him and there he was, this white person. And when you listen to Aindra Prabhu's singing, you know, it seems like some Indian devotee singing. And there he was with red hair and a red beard. I was amazed. And I moved to the ashram. And then this is when everything started. You know, I was 18. I thought I was the best mridanga player. And I was so proud. And so, even more, so proud to be Ayindar Prabhu's Mridanga player. And every day for a whole year after the kirtans, he would call me to his room. And he would lecture me for 2-3 hours how I was not the best Mridanga player. Yeah, I mean, you can lecture maybe for 5 minutes. You can say, tell someone, oh, you're proud, you're too proud, you're not the best Mridanga player. But for 2-3 hours, quoting shastras. And one day he asked me, can you play better Mridanga player than Shiva? Shiva is the best drummer. What do you say to this? And I was just... And many times I would argue with him as an 18-year-old. You know, I wouldn't accept. But most of the time I would sit down and listen. And because, you know, I was just defeated, and I didn't want to accept. The ego was like, no, I'm good. And many times I would just, you know, listen to him, and tears would just start rolling down my eyes because I knew what he was saying was right, and it was painful for me to take. And one of the main ingredients of kirtan is humility. We have to be humble to be able to attract Sri Nam Prabhu. And one day, I'll tell you a little story. One day, Ayindar Prabhu came to my room, and he knocked on the door, and he said, Madhava, let's go clean the toilets. And these are the brahmachari toilets in Vrindavan Dham. I don't want to describe it. Ajay knows he was living at the temple. But it was filthy. So he said, let's go clean the toilets. It will be good for you to purify your heart. I looked at him. I thought he was joking. And I told him, no way. I never even clean toilets in my own house. What a speak, you know, those crazy toilets. And he was serious. And I kept on saying, no way. I'm not cleaning toilets. And then he turned around. You know, he went to his room. He put on his gamsha. Then I looked through the door, and he was walking out with his gamsha, some gloves, and a gallon of acid. And it just gave me a few minutes to think, you know, to really ponder, you know, what am I doing? You know, I'm 18 years old. I think I know everything. I'm so proud. I think I'm the best Mridanga player. You know, I'm such an idiot. You know, look at this devotee. You know, so humble. You know, he has such a taste for chanting the holy names. And he's willing to, like, you know, lower himself and go clean the toilets. So I quickly changed into my gamsha, ran to the toilet and joined Ayindar Prabhu. And we cleaned toilets for about 3-4 hours. And Ayindar Prabhu was so blissful. He was chanting. He was chanting kirtan, and you know, while pouring acid. And it was, honestly speaking, it was one of the best experiences in my life, because, you know, it felt like, you know, there was layers of impurities that was getting cleansed. You know, it was not only physically cleaning the toilets, but it was cleaning the heart. You know, some pride went, and then after that we had the best kirtans. And for 1 year, I chose to do the night shift, what we call the graveyard shift, from 10 o'clock at night to 4:30 in the morning, 6.5 hours. And there's no one around. Most of the time there was two, myself and one, another friend, another devotee. And sometimes, well, actually many times, you know, we'd be there alone. And, you know, 10 o'clock we would start, you know, the mind is like all strong, and because we just had milk At 8 o'clock, milk and puff rice, muri. At 8 o'clock, so we're ready for the night. 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, still okay. Then it comes like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And the mind starts getting tired and the body gets tired. You know, you start thinking, you know, the especially in winter, you know, the stomach starts growling. You can hear it. You know, it's like getting hungry. You know, because we just had a little rice, puff rice, and a glass of milk. And then you start looking at the clock. And you're thinking, when is this going to be over? You know, when is Mangalarti, you know, going to come? You know, and time would just stay still. Because, you know, the mind wasn't into the kirtan. But some days, you know, when, you know, we would put an effort into, you know, the kirtan, really focus, really try to connect with, you know, this mantra, really try to chant, because Srila Prabhupada wanted, it was Srila Prabhupada's desire, and to chant for Krishna's pleasure, time would just fly. You know, you look at the clock, it was 10 o'clock, and suddenly it's already Mangalarti, 6.5 hours was gone so quickly. Because when the mind is absorbed, you know, in kirtan, because kirtan is spiritual, it's not material sound vibration that we're vibrating, that we're chanting, it's Krishna himself. We lose track of time. You know, he takes control of this time. So we should try. You know, this was my little training, you know, with Ayendra Prabhu, especially those night kirtans. And when I started chanting, I knew one melody. This devotee, Ananda Chaitanya from Nepal, you know, short boy, he told me this Nepali folk melody on the harmonium, Hare Krishna. So I knew only one melody. So I had to sing one melody for six hours. for 1 year. You know, and you know, sometimes this other boy would chant one melody for like, you know, an hour or so, then I would play mridanga. But most of the time it was me singing. And wow, it was like one melody for like 5-6 hours. And I was forced. I was forced to be absorbed. It wasn't about the melody, because there was one melody, and if I thought about it, you know, I would just get crazy. So it had to be, you know, I was forced to focus on the holy names. Now we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, practical kirtans. Now, very often we hear, when we're listening to Srila Prabhupada's lectures, we often hear Srila Prabhupada say, sit properly. We heard that before, right? Sitting properly means, you know, we sit cross-legged with the back straight, like a yogi. Because this kirtan is yoga, you know. It's the highest form of yoga, bhakti yoga. And for that to happen, we need to be controlling the senses and trying to control the mind. And sitting down in a straight posture and breathing properly helps to keep the mind fresh and, you know, not bored. Now we'll go to the next step, which is the duty of the kirtan leader. You know, first thing is that, you know, the kirtan leaders, it's not just one performance that we're doing. It's not a performance. Kirtan is not a performance. You know, we're trying, we are messengers. So we're trying to give this mantra to as many people as possible. So we have to be transparent. Transparent means, you know, purity. We have to be able to transmit that message. And this can be done by our spiritual practices. You know, we chant our 16 rounds, we follow the principles. You know, we do our service. And then we come in and chant. And then our kirtan has some credibility. It has some shakti. If we don't practice, if we don't have any spiritual practices, we just come and chant. It doesn't go deep. It doesn't touch our heart, and it doesn't touch Krishna's heart, what to speak of other people. So that spiritual practice is very important. One time this Gurukuli boy, you know, he challenged Ayendra Prabhu. He said, Japa is not the Yuga Dharma. Kirtan is the Yuga Dharma. So why do we have to chant Japa? We can just sing Kirtan. And Ayendra Prabhu, you know, he got red. And, you know, his hair's already red. He got really angry. And he said, I chant 64 rounds or more. That's why my kirtans have so much potency, so much shakti. And you can't even chant your 16 rounds and you expect for your kirtans to have any effect. So it is very important, you know, to all those who are trying to lead kirtan to have their spiritual principles, their spiritual practices strong. Now we come to the, you know, more practical stuff, the instruments. You know, we have the kartals, the mridanga. You know, these are the original instruments that we use in Kirtan Mahaprabhu's times. They also had the bugles, you know, the horns, and the wampas. You know, the harmonium came later. Bass guitar came much later. Accordion, you know. But all these can be used in time, place, and circumstances. But the kartal and the mridanga, you know, these are the two important instruments, especially the kartals. I'll do a little kartal demonstration. But it is the duty of the kartal player to follow the mridanga player. And the duty of the mridanga player to follow the kirtan leader. It is not the other way around. Right? This is not like the kartal player goes fast when the kirtan leader is going slowly. Then it forces the kartal player, forces the mridanga player to go faster. And then the mridanga player, you know, it's not his fault. He wants to go slowly, but he's forced by the kartal player. And then it forces the singer to go fast. And this is not the mood that the kirtan leader is trying to set. You know, he wants, or she wants to have it, you know, slow kirtan, then later it picks up. So we have to be very attentive. We have to be very attentive and very conscious, you know, to work together as a team. You know, this is not our show. This is not our time when we're going to be shining in the limelight. You know, this, watch me, I'm playing kartals today. For the next 2 hours, everybody shine the light on me. Oh, I'm playing mridanga, look at my hands. You know, it's moving so fast, I can't even see my hands moving. No. This is, you know, I'm chanting, you know, everybody hear this melody very carefully. Because this is my latest melody. No. No, this is, kirtan is not about us. Like Radhika mentioned, kirtan is meant only for Krishna's pleasure. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur very firmly says kirtan should be performed only for Krishna's pleasure. Because when we're trying to please Krishna, when we're trying to glorify Krishna, everyone else is pleased. The acharyas are pleased. This is how we get the blessings. The blessings that come from up. You know, it doesn't come from learning fancy melodies or fancy mridanga playing. No, it comes by pleasing those acharyas. And then when we are blessed, then the kirtan naturally happens. You know, then we connected with Sri Nam Prabhu. You know, who is a person? You know, most of the time we forget about this. You know, we think it's just, you know, some mantra that we're chanting that makes us feel good and happy and, you know, we're floating. It's like, whoa, this is the coolest stuff. It is the coolest stuff. But it's more than this. So working together as a team. And we have the kirtan core, those devotees sitting, you know, close to the kirtan group, the kartal players, the mridanga player, the kirtaniya himself, you know, the instrument players. Then we have the devotees sitting further back. You know, if you sit close, if you've been to many kirtans, and you try to come as close as possible to that kirtan core, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of power going on. You know, because everyone is trying to work together as a team. If they're working together as a team, then we can feel that shakti. If we're not working together as a team, you know, it's going to be chaos. You know, it's just like, okay, everyone's doing their own thing. The holy name is not present. You know, we have to put the holy name and worship the holy name on a pedestal. You know, that these instruments, they're meant to beautify, to glorify the holy name. So working as a team, you know, like I explained, the kartal player follows the mridanga player and stuff. And then what is the duty of, you know, the chorus? Right? Can anyone tell me? What is the duty of those sitting down in the crowd, in the temple room? What do they do? Support the kirtan in what way? To listen attentively. Okay? Yes, that's very important. It all starts with shravanam. So if we were listening attentively, you know, before when Radhika was singing, she was singing one melody. And I was listening. And everyone else, mostly, was singing something else. So we have to listen very carefully. You know, it's not that we know this melody, it was sung in a different way. And that verse, Radhika is singing it in a different way. So we're singing the way we learned it, the way we know it. No, this is just the mind, you know, we're just listening to our mind. We're not listening to the kirtan leader. You know, it's one of the offenses, being inattentive while chanting the holy names. So we have to focus, you know, listening, shravanam and then kirtanam. Satchinandan Maharaj says, you know, if we listen properly, there's a good chance that we will chant properly. And then the kirtan core, you know, usually it's like, you know, the young devotees who play kartals, who play instruments, you know, who have strong energy, who can sit down for a long time. You know, they come forward and because they have this stamina. What about the older devotees, the senior devotees, you know, the Prabhupada disciples, or someone who's been in the movement for like 30, 40 years? What about them? we need to honor them because they're senior, and the blessing comes from the senior Vaishnavas. We as younger devotees, we need to invite them, you know, make an asana for them if they can't sit down in the chair on the ground, cross-legged, you know, give them a chair. We invite them. If they want to sit at the back and lean against the wall because they have some back problems, that's fine. But it is our duty, you know, out of respect and culture to invite them. You know, not that all the young people just come in front and all these are forgotten. Not good at all. Yeah. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the mindset of the kirtan leader. You know, the acharyas, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Narottam Das Thakur, they've written, you know, wonderful songs, you know, teaching us the mood of a devotee. You know, I do not have any qualities whatsoever, but my dear Krishna, please accept me. I want to chant your names. I do not have any taste whatsoever. Like Radhika was saying, you know, it's not just flowery words, poetic words, you know, to make us feel humble, but we have to actually feel that we do not have any qualities whatsoever. You know, what do we have? Beautiful voice, you know, compared to these, you know, gopas and gopis and gandharvas in the spiritual world, we're not even as good as their croaking frogs. You know, so, you know, that mood. Krishna doesn't need our beautiful voices. Krishna doesn't need our fancy mridanga playing or kartal playing or whatever instrument we're playing. But Krishna sees the attitude. Krishna sees the little devotion, the little bhakti that we have. So by reading those songs of these great acharyas, even if we can't feel it, but, you know, by reading those and trying to pray that, you know, hopefully by the grace of Narottam Das Thakur or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by praying to them, you know, maybe one day we'll be able to have those genuine feelings so that we can, that will help us to really appeal to the holy name. And the kirtaniya, the one chanting, is not controlling. Is not. He's a servant. You know, we don't use the kirtan for our own purpose. You know, so that, you know, we get name, fame, adoration, distinction, you know, women. It's, and money, whatever comes with kirtan. But no, we have to be servants. The servant of the holy name. And kirtan is a powerful form of prayer, you know, where we humbly beg. You know, in the material world, beggars are considered to be the lowest, right? We see a beggar on the street, you know, we don't even look at him, right? Or we just throw one little coin. But in the spiritual sense, begging is the highest, because to be able to beg, we have to be humble, we have to be meek, and that's very difficult, you know, because we think we know everything. You know, we've learned that we have to be humble. You know, maybe for 2 hours we pretend to be humble in the kirtan, you know, close the eyes but then what's happening outside? You start shouting at your neighbor, or, you know, you get angry. But no, It's a whole practice. It's a lifestyle. You know, of course, in kirtan we have to be even more, you know, we have to put that into more practice. But it should be applied in our daily life. You know, in this prayerful mood and begging. Begging the holy name, begging these acharyas who have a strong taste for the holy name to please bless us so that one day we can have a little taste for chanting.
So Madhava was talking about kirtan, and one of the things that he mentioned was the melody. I just wanted to relate a little experience that we've had while doing kirtan in different places of the world. Sometimes we sing a melody, like for instance the melody that this devotee sang yesterday, the girl that sang before Rangini, I think, or after Rangini. It's a very famous melody that you like very much here. But the first time, it's an Indra Prabhu's melody actually. And long time ago when we used to sing that, it sang a little bit differently. And just try to hear if you find the difference. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Did you hear anything? Did you see any difference? What was it?
Hare? How many Hare? Four? Five?
There was one Hare too much in the first part.
Three Hares.
Three Hares. So sometimes we sing melodies where there's and the devotees do not pay attention. They're singing four Krishnas. Collectively. It's like a collective amnesia or something. Every single person, very enthusiastically, with eyes closed, feeling the ecstasy and the bhav is entering the heart with four Krishnas. How is that possible? What is it? What is it? What's making it work? It's a rhythm. It's a rhythm of the music. So we have to be careful that it's not just a rhythm. It's a mantra. Are we also talking about the basis of real kirtan? Real kirtan comes from dainya. You know, dainya is the humility that attracts Krishna. It's a stage very, very difficult to attain. When Krishna favors someone, he gives suffering that forces detachment and dependence on him. I'm just going to read from Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. A little quote. Bhagavan Hari, who contains within himself all the demigods, must be satisfied with me. It is he who has brought me to this suffering condition and forced me to experience detachment, which is the boat to carry me over this ocean of material life. Normally we are very scared to hear this word, you know, detachment. It means we have to give up our little sense enjoyment. How can I do that? You know, how will I be happy? Can't be happy without it. But somehow or the other, you know, to be able to come to that stage where we're crying out for Krishna and attracts him, it's a different level. It's a kind of kirtan that changes life. Lives. Like Prabhupada in Tompkins Square Park. Try to see the picture. One old man, 70 years old, with one pair of kartal, singing strange names that nobody could understand. Not even in the English language. And people came, and they became devotees. What power does this mantra have? So, that kind of kirtan is what we are aspiring for. And on our level, good japa is a necessity. It means attentive, regular, and consistent chanting every single day. Some understanding of the philosophy must be there. We need to regularly study Prabhupada's books because we forget very easily. We forget very easily why we even came, why we were looking, why we came and started chanting Hare Krishna. Practice of sadhana bhakti and the lifestyle of a devotee is imperative. This whole philosophy, because we have material bodies, we need a social structure to be able to live that philosophy. And the only social structure that there is, it's not the Western social structure, because that is based on satisfying the senses. The Vedic social structure, the remnants of which is Indian culture, is based on satisfying the intelligence. They have the same goal, which means sense gratification. But one wants sense gratification by just giving into the senses. It's a Western culture. And the other culture wants sense gratification by controlling the senses by the intelligence, which means, I'll try to explain it a little bit simpler. It's Friday night, in England, in London, let's say, and George and Harry, they go clubbing, whereas Anil and Ajay stay home, study, because they want that certificate, they want that degree, that later on they have so much money, they will enjoy on a higher plane. So it's the same goal, sense gratification. Sense gratification, one by controlling the senses, the other one by giving in to the senses. So Vedic culture is, you want your sense gratification, you can have it, but control your senses. Use your intelligence. So if we can live our devotional life by understanding how it works, it gets easier. Otherwise, it's very confusing. And we regularly need to do menial service to Vaishnavas and to Krishna. It's actually essential. Like Madhava was saying, devotion does not equal musical talent, popularity, good voice, followers. The list can go on. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was leaving his body, one of his disciples, Sridhar Swami, came and started to sing Shri Rupa Manjari Pada. And Bhaktisiddhanta liked this bhajan very, very much. So when he started to sing, one godbrother stopped him and said, "No, somebody else sing." And Bhaktisiddhanta, he hadn't been speaking for a while, but he spoke and said, "Why did you stop him?" And that particular godbrother said, "Because this one sings much better." And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "We're not looking for talent here." So Sridhar Swami resumed his singing. Now, I was curious, what does he sound like? And his Guru Maharaj, on his deathbed, wanted to hear him sing. So, you know, Google is a universal guru these days. Went on Google and try to find out, what does he sing like? What does he sound like? So there was a recording of him singing Shri Rupa Manjari Pada. If you listen to it, he sings very simple. Like a 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3 beat. But his voice is like pregnant with emotion. It's almost impossible to describe. It's such a feeling when you hear him say, even form those words. It's a pretty amazing experience. So we have to know what we're looking for, because whatever we look for, we will get it. And maybe we don't always want what we get. So, the other thing that is very important is faith. Guru says that by chanting this mantra, we uncover our spiritual identity and our relationship with Krishna is revealed. We have to trust that, whether we believe in it or not, whether we see it happening or not. Bhaktisiddhanta says there's no need to read esoteric literatures, because the Maha Mantra reveals everything to the sincere practitioner. This is very, very important to believe, actually. Sorry. I'm just going to quote. Those who think that they can attain a rasa, rasa is the mellows of relationship, without first having attained rati, rati is attachment, and prior to that, having attained anartha nivritti, which means having cleaned the heart, have understood the process of pure devotional service in reverse. And then he gives the example of this reverse process can be compared to that of rubbing dry grass against the udder of a cow and expecting to get milk from her mouth. It is simply not possible. The faith needed to believe all that is not cheap. It comes from a deep understanding of spiritual nature. Because we have to keep going even when we see no apparent results. You know, there was also this one time, one of the sannyasis of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote to him and said, Guru Maharaj, I am not feeling it. Nothing is happening. There's no progress being done. What can I do? What shall I do? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote to him and said, if at this particular time, this is all that Krishna wants you to have, then accept it. But do not stop your practices. Keep going. The paradox is the more we feel we are nowhere, the greater the chances are that we have actually progressed. So, there is the other story that I told before, you know. Two other sannyasis went to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur with the same problem. We've been practicing for years and nothing has happened. We are still, you know, at square one. What's the point of continuing? They were crying. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if you really feel like that, then you are on the right path. Because to feel that you have progressed would have been dangerous. Now, okay, we understand all this, we start to chant, we are sincere. Still there are safeguards. We have to be very careful of certain things. Offenses against the holy name. The first offense is the worst of all. To blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their lives to the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Now, who are those devotees? Where do we find them? Are they the, you know, Mahabhagavats? Are they the Uttama Adhikaris? Uttama Adhikaris we would not even recognize if they were here. Because they really feel that they are below everybody else. So these devotees that we should not blaspheme, this is everybody sitting in this temple room. Any one of us who has at one point of our lives talked to somebody about Krishna, we have become dear to Krishna. And we have to be careful of offending each other. And we have to beware of what is very easily called a deviation. We should beware of cheap thrills. We should not force an experience. Like I was in Kirtan and suddenly I felt this cold wind on me. And I felt the ecstasy descending on me and I saw visions. I mean, we should be careful of such things. Or we should not imagine high realization. I was sitting in Kirtan, I saw myself, I was a gopi in Krishna's pastimes. We do not pretend to great taste. We do not use our mundane senses to imagine things and attribute those things, attribute spiritual qualities to those things. We should always, always get back to the Shastras. When Prabhupada felt ecstasy, he stopped singing. And tears came out of his eyes. Right? When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? We have to be careful of cheap thrills, really, because if we really have such a taste for Krishna, such an attachment for him, then things like eating, sleeping, it's cold, it's hot, I'm wearing shoes, I'm not wearing shoes, they don't matter. We're not even conscious of all those things. But if we still are, it means, and we think we are great, there's something very wrong there. It's very, very easy to deviate. In this book, Prakriti Rasa Satadushani, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote 100 verses against Sahajas. 90% of his life, he spoke against the Sahajas. 90% of his life, he spoke about what Krishna consciousness is not. And the 10% follows easily once we understand that. So we have to really eliminate, like, these esoteric books of the Goswamis about the Parsamatha of Radha and Krishna. We have to be careful if we are reading them. Because normally it follows that we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, it's revealed in our heart, and we become a little bit scared. Am I becoming a sahaja and imagining things? So as to know I'm not imagining things, I read the book to confirm whether it's imagination or not. That's one of the ways to do that. But we just have to be careful, because if you're not on the level, we will just increase our lust. That's all that's going to happen. Also, Ketan, it's best to do Ketan with like-minded people, Sajatiya. It's important to have Ketan in small groups also, you know, that we are sitting here in the big temple room. Sometimes just sit in front of the deities and we just chant. One person, two persons, three, it doesn't matter. There's no time limit. There's no, okay, 1 hour, I have 1 hour, and then it's over, and then somebody else comes. This, we just do it. There's no boundary here. It's for the pleasure of Krishna only. Once when Prabhupada came to Australia, he sat down, and in about half an hour, he sang like 10 different melodies. And then he said, Krishna likes variety. And then he got up. So we can also do that. There's different things we can do. We don't have to rely on this big production to do kirtan. The best kirtans, actually, I mean, personally, for me, when Madhava was saying he was doing kirtan for 1 hour, for 1 year, 6.5 hours in Vrindavan. And these were kirtans at night. And somehow or the other, a Polish devotee recorded one of those kirtans. I think he did not even know that. And when we came to England one time, he was listening to this kirtan and he said, it sounds like me. Where did you get that? That was his Polish devotee who recorded this kirtan at night, one person singing, the person who is playing medanga is playing 1, 2, 3 on the medanga, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. He was falling asleep apparently. It was in the middle of the night. It's one of the best kirtans I've ever heard. And I remember going in the car with my friend, and in Switzerland, her husband was playing that kirtan. And he said, did you ever hear that? I said, this is Madhava. No, this is Radhakund Baba. What Radhakund Baba? No, this is Madhava. And they did not even know. But it was just one of the best kirtans, because there was nobody around. You don't have to impress anyone. So one of the best kirtans when we do in front of the deities, just us alone. And Krishna. And we rely on Krishna. The melody is not good because I don't know it so well. Voice is not good. The playing is not good. Who cares? Krishna is looking for the devotion. I just do it. And you'll be surprised what comes. Okay, so the goal of all this, of course, is Krishna Prema. As far as early as 1968, in a lecture, Prabhupada mentions that all we're doing is so that one day we can take part in Krishna's Rasa Lila. This is very, very high. But that was 1968. There's a goal there. You know, there's a goal there. How we get there, we don't know. It's a step-by-step scientific process, which we cannot try to speed up. That would be dangerous. But there's a goal. And if we keep that goal in mind while trying to do the tedious, repetitive, same thing every day, we clean our heart. And, you know, the end result is dependent on the holy name. He's Swatantra, independent. whatever he wants. He's the one who is going to reciprocate. So I'll finish with a small story from the Mahabharata. After the war, Krishna stayed with the five Pandavas for a while. And then he told them, go and visit your kingdom. Just go everywhere. And then you come back and you report to me. So everybody went out in five different directions. And Yudhishthira came back and said, oh Krishna, everything was all right, but I saw something really strange. Oh, what was it? I saw this elephant. And it had double tusks on each side. I could not understand what could be the meaning of that. And Krishna said, in the age of Kali, people will speak in a way and mean something else. Basically, they'll be hypocrites. So, and Bhima came back and said, while riding on my horse, I came to this big, big lake. It was big and deep and completely empty. But all around, there were small, small water holes. And it was full of water. And the water was running from one water hole to the other. But not one drop would go into this big, deep lake. What could it be? What could be the meaning of this? Krishna said, in the age of Kali, people are attracted to that which is superficial and easy. That which is profound and deep doesn't attract anybody. And Arjuna came back. He said, Hare Krishna, while riding through the forest, I heard this beautiful singing of shlokas. It was so attractive. I followed the sound and came to this clearing. And there was a tree. And I saw this bird. It was so beautiful with the feathers, almost like jewel-like birds. And it was singing the most beautiful shlokas. And then I guess it got tired. And it flew down. And I followed with my eyes. But then I saw it flew down. There was a carcass, a dead body down there. It was eating from the dead body. And he went back up on the tree and resumed the beautiful shlokas. How can that be? And Krishna said, in the Kali Yuga, people will be speaking in a way, pleasant way, but their behavior will not be very good. So basically, they'll be pretenders. And then Nakula came back and said, I was going through the village and I saw this Goshala. So I stopped for a while and I just watched. There was this cow. She was giving birth. And the calf came out and she lovingly started to lick the calf. And she was licking the calf. And she was licking the calf and I kept watching. She was licking the calf and licking and licking and licking. And I kept watching and she kept licking until she started to draw blood from the calf. What can be the meaning of this? And Krishna says, in the Kali Yuga, parents will be overly affectionate towards their children to their own detriment. And Sahadev came back and said, I was riding on my horse at the foot of this mountain. And then lightning struck and I heard this big noise and I looked up. This big boulder started to roll down the mountain. There was a village at the foot of the mountain and horrified, I watched as this boulder gathered speed and was rolling faster and faster and I knew it was going to crush the village. But Krishna, I could do nothing. I just stood there watching, horrified. But then suddenly it stopped. I looked. It wouldn't move. What had happened? Then plucking courage, I went slowly up to where the boulder had stopped. And I tried to see what were the causes why it stopped. I saw this very frail plant. Almost like a weed, very, very frail creeper type. And this is what had stopped this boulder from rolling down? And Krishna said, the only thing to stop the progress of the age of Kali is Harinam Sankirtan. That's a creeper. The Harinam Sankirtan. So, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna, just before we finish, I'm going to do a little mridanga demonstration. Ayana Prabhu used to say, Krishna has very fine ears and we should be very conscious and very sensitive how we play the instruments, the kartals, the mridangas. So the mridanga is a sacred drum. It's not just any drum. He's non-different. He is not it. He is non-different from Balaram. Balaram himself. And when Krishna was coming down to the material world, you know, appearing as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his flute complained. He said, are you going down to Navadvip? And are you going to leave me here? You know, I'm always, you know, your most faithful friend. You know, I'm always stuck to your lips. You know, please bring me down. Please bring me with you. And then Krishna said, okay. And the flute appeared as the mridanga. So this is Krishna's flute. This is Balaram. So we have the very first thing that we do before, even before starting playing mridanga, is we pay our respects to Lord Balaram. And we have, for those of you who learn mridanga, we have a special mantra for the mridanga. Namo Jagannathaya Sutaya Namo Mridanga Lavanang Asamaduri Sahasra Gunasang Yuktam Namo Mridanga Namaha Namo Baladevaya Namaha. So with respect and humility in the heart, we pay our respects to the mridanga, touch it, touch him to our inner heart and head, and ask for the blessings to be able to be an instrument, you know, not use the mridanga for our own purposes, but to glorify Krishna by playing this instrument. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, came to America. He didn't have any instruments, right? He came just with a pair of kartals, you know, and started chanting this wonderful mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just by his purity and his faith in his guru's words, he basically changed the world. And this is the reason we're here today, you know, sitting in Slovenia. You know, we would never dream of coming to Slovenia. You know, we come from an island, you know, right in the middle of nowhere in the ocean, Mauritius, you know. Now we're here in Ljubljana, in Slovenia, and in this beautiful Panchatantra temple. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And mridanga came later, you know. Mridanga came after, you know, in America. And when Prabhupada got news that the mridanga came You know, he came down and personally opened the package and told Mukunda Maharaj, you know, to put a cloth, a chadar around the mridanga, you know, to protect the mridanga, to respect the mridanga. And Prabhupada himself, you know, he taught the devotees how to play mridanga. You know, we, you know, the famous Prabhupada beat. So I'm going to show you the very basic Prabhupada beat. This is not a mantra. This is, you know, from listening. But there are mantras for this rhythm, you know. We often hear this when Prabhupada is singing. Very simple. Right? And we can do other variations, make it a little bit more fancy. Fancy. Right. Now I'm going to do a, you know, this is for adults, right? Don't try and do this at home. These are dangerous stunts. The same Prabhupada beat, but a little bit more fancy. All right. Started learning mridanga, you know, I would experiment, you know, try and, you know, get every sound out of the mridanga, you know, the closed sound, the open sound, you know, the one half closed, and try everything, play with the drum, get to know the instrument, you know, and sometimes we hear devotees play with the nails. Right?